Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ninth episode of the MV Red Podcast. This is Michael Metzinger. Joining me is Dane Davis, and on this episode, we're going to focus entirely on the biggest topic taking place in the country right now that has essentially shut down this country in many ways, the coronavirus or COVID-19, or as our president likes to call it, the Chinese virus. So we are going to focus entirely on it today. We'll talk a little bit about the Chinese and their role in this. We're going to talk about the economic impact, being that Dane and I work in the financial sector, so we have our thoughts on that, and the stimulus, which Dane has coined the term Trump bucks. So we'll talk about Trump bucks, and we will talk about President Trump and how he's been handling the crisis, as well as Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. And Dane wants to talk as well a little bit about Joe Biden. So that's going to be what we're going to talk about on this episode. So before we begin, Dane, a lot has happened. How's social distancing working for you?
Well, let me just explain. Thursday I left work early because word was coming that we were all going to have to work from home. So I left work early, got everything set up, and I've been working from home ever since then. So it's like a week and a half, roughly. And, you know, it's been good. It's been good. Two young children. Obviously, that creates a little bit of tension in the house. But, you know, my wife and I are dealing with it, I think, very maturely. We're constantly communicating. If you're at home with a spouse, I highly recommend it. Just, you know, overly communicative, just so you can keep things going. But, you know, it's been what it is. I went to the grocery store today. People are kind of, the grocery store workers are kind of exhausted. Both grocery stores were out of eggs. Fortunately, though, all the European cheeses and exotic French wines were all still stocked in the shelves, but eggs were gone, so I don't know, the yuppies will survive, but anyway, that's what's going on, and, you know, I'm hoping and praying that everybody in Ohio and throughout the country, and actually throughout the world, stay safe. I mean, this has really blown up very quickly.
Yeah, it's crazy times, and our last episode was like 2.5 or 3 weeks ago, and I'll be honest, I did not anticipate this happening in any way, shape, or form. Just even, I think it was about 10 days ago is when Italy shut down, or it was 10 or 12 days ago, and I thought to myself, wow, that's terrible for that country. It's going to have such a huge impact on their economy. Tourism is such a big part of it. Among other things, and now here we are on March 20th, and a number of states are essentially shutting down outside of the essential businesses, such as grocery stores and gas stations and pharmacies. But it's crazy. As of tonight, we're over. I thought the number I last saw was close to 20,000 cases in the U.S. and when we did this last podcast a few weeks ago, there was less than 100 cases in the entire country. So in terms of the numbers, it's spreading fast. And yes, in terms of just the impact on everybody, not only from the perspective of the shutdowns, but just the perspective of the stock market down 35% or so off the highs.
Oh, yeah, the economic fallout.
Yes,
yeah.
It's just been crazy.
It's come on pretty strong. I don't remember what I said the last episode on Corona, if I thought it was going to be big or not. It's tough. It's really tough. And, you know, here's a couple of random thoughts. I don't know where this is going, but just hear me out, right?
the first thought is, I think this just goes to prove we're going to talk politics because this is a politics podcast. It goes without saying that, you know, the first concern is everybody remains healthy and that we all work together as Americans. But, you know, when Trump 4 years ago ran for office and he talked about the Chinese and all what, you know, was going on with the Chinese and offshoring and all that, people kind of made fun of him. People kind of laughed at him, right? It's kind of silly. Obviously, we're always going to import from China and they need to have our industry. But I think he's proven to be right. When he implemented the tariffs, people freaked out. Oh, it's the end of the world. It's the end of the world. It's going to destroy the economy. The economy was stronger than ever before, obviously, Corona. And, you know, I'm reading stories about we're the wealthiest country in the world,
quote unquote.
And we can't secure masks. We can't secure basic, you know, items that
are needed, ventilators, hospital equipment, masks, and that.
And then you start to read why, and it's extremely depressing that
all of it's manufactured in China or Taiwan.
And I think the first lesson here, when this is all done,
the first long-term lesson, right,
is we need to make sure that we have an active industrial policy and we fight to keep an industrial base in the United States. We can't protect
every job and every industry,
but there should be core industries which we never outsource again. I read a really stunning statistic, Michael. In 2002, I don't know how old you were in 2002, probably like 13.
Yeah, 12. Right around your age.
Yeah, yeah. So in 2002, 100% of ibuprofen, right, was made here in the United States. It was manufactured domestically. Now, 97% is imported. That means only 3% of the ibuprofen we consume is made here in the United States. We basically outsourced our pharmaceutical industry in terms of the production of these drugs to China and to other countries. And I think it's absolutely wrong. And I think that we should never again be in this situation where we're dependent upon other countries for basic medical supplies, especially as a country as rich as we are, as big as we are. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that should be at the forefront of every business in this country right now that for the past two decades have used outsourcing as a means to boost their bottom line. And they did it for a number of reasons, but obviously labor costs are a huge part of it. But when you have a country like ours that is relying on the Chinese to supply not only some medicines like you had cited, but our medical supplies, it's alarming. So in that respect, it's something that I think we as a country have to really examine once this all subsides and how we're going to treat that moving forward. Because you cannot trust, first off, you can't rely on another country to supply that critical of an asset for your healthcare system. And secondly, you just can't trust the Chinese, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes. But so that's the initial thoughts. But then just the trickle down of that, even manufacturers across the country that utilize the Chinese and now have been forced to shut their doors temporarily, not only because of the supply chain impact, but because of the impacts being imposed by the government, state, federal level across the country right now. So it's something that hopefully, as we're going to go through a lot of pain with this coronavirus and the economic impact and the healthcare impact. I just hope that we reevaluate how we do things in the future. And this is to the core of what Donald Trump has been championing for so long. Donald Trump delivered on tax relief for businesses, and yet we still have businesses that just do stuff overseas just to really continue to boost that bottom line. Well, I think hopefully this is the unfortunate reminder to these businesses that they need to start doing stuff here in the U.S. Because if we were doing these things in the United States, I don't think we would have as many problems as we currently have at this point.
Absolutely. So I think that this is a big wake-up call for people on the right wing, and left wing as well, but particularly the right wing, because they've moved the fastest on here. You know, I'm a conservative, but I'm also a nationalist. And I'm a nationalist in the same way that I love my family, right? I love my wife. I love my children. Do I hate your family? No. Do I, you know, am I against Michael Metzinger's wife and Michael Metzinger's children? No. Do I love your family as equally as mine? If I'm being honest, no, right? I love my family first and foremost. And it's through that particular, right, through the particular that you understand and grow love for everybody, right? And it's the same is true for the nation state. I love my country. I don't hate any other country. Maybe China, but we'll get to that in a moment. I love the United States. I'm a nationalist for America. I want America to prosper. I want America to do well the same way I want my family to do well. But that doesn't mean that I want other countries to do poorly. And I think it's really important that the right wing embraces this new nationalist mindset. And this should be the core of the right wing in America is a new nationalism, right? That says America first in all things. You know, if you look at industry, industry has done very well. The rich have done very well over the last 30 or 40 years. The people who haven't done well are the middle class, the working class, and the people that relied upon these jobs. And now the greed of the people at the top, right, is actually affecting our own country and our own security, national defense, our health, right? People are suffering and dying because somebody thought it would be cheaper to outsource these goods. And it starts with, you know, the political class allowed China to join the World Trade Organization around 2000, 2001, and it's been all downhill for there. So I think we need to say on the right wing, you know, we are pro-markets. I am pro-business. I am pro-capitalism. It's an efficient system. It's a great tool. It makes people wealthy. It, you know, allows people to be free. I'm not against these things, but let's recognize that they're tools. And they're tools in service of a larger goal. The market is not the end in and of itself, right? People are not citizens so that they can participate in America. America is not a shopping mall. It's not a strip plaza. It's a country. It's a brotherhood, a sisterhood, right? And I think we need to say to the market, you know, it's all well and good to make money, but there are limits. And one of those limits is you cannot undercut your own country in order to make this money. So no more outsourcing to the Chinese, to the Vietnamese, to any of these guys. You know, can they make, you know, soccer balls? Fine, whatever. But for the high value goods, make them in America, throw up a 30% tariff wall, whatever it takes, and no longer tolerate, you know, the hollowing out of our industrial core. I think that's true conservatism, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
What I hope to come of this, and I hope this is something Trump can act on post-crisis, is work with Congress, because I would expect something like that, like what you just mentioned, to prevent American businesses from outsourcing, especially these types of things. I would think that's not a political issue. That should be an American issue. It's a healthcare issue. It could be a national security issue. It provides a host of issues that impact our country, and I would think something like that would be something that could resonate across party lines and something that,
right.
Unfortunately, it took to a crisis like this to see how detrimental outsourcing could be to our country. So that's something I hope we could possibly see happen. And then other things just could be, even with manufacturers, you know, I still go back to them because so many of them still do it, whether it's China or down to Latin America. You know, they need to take a long, hard look. If we're going to support you providing tax relief or government incentives to build factories here and there, but you're still doing things overseas, we really got to question whether we should be offering these things for them, or if there's any sort of means of, I don't know, if it's a tax penalty, not a tax penalty, some sort of special tax on these types of things. To just remind these people, you need to be doing this in our country. And it kind of goes back to what you were just mentioning about being I guess what you used the term nationalist, correct?
Yeah,
nationalist. And I know sometimes that gets painted negatively in the media, but you use a good example of, you know, we got to take care of our own people first, and things like that. Although maybe it could be a little counterintuitive to the complete idea of capitalism and a free market and all that. It's some controls in place, I guess you could call it that. Maybe I'm sounding more liberal than I should here.
No, that's not liberal.
But
no,
it's championed this idea of let's take care of our own people. Let's do stuff in our own country, and good things can come of it.
Look, the world is changing. The politics is moving fast. There's a massive realignment happening within American politics, right? The terms conservative and liberal that we've thrown around for so long really no longer apply. I think that it's a globalist versus a nationalist outlook. You know, there's one view of
We want to empower people to work. We want to protect our own industries. We want to protect our own people. And most importantly, we want to protect our own citizens, right? Citizenship means something. Citizenship has value. Just because you walk across the border doesn't mean you're a citizen of the United States and you're entitled to all the benefits. There's another view that basically says open borders, open markets, free trade. You know, the Democrats have become the party of free trade increasingly because they're the party of globalism. And their way of dealing with it is, oh, you lost your job. Here, have some credits to go get retrained, or here, have some welfare bucks. Or whatever it may be so that you keep yourself afloat. And I think that the new mentality on the right needs to be one of, you go back to Germany with Bismarck in the 19th century. And Bismarck was a conservative. And he was dealing, he unified Germany under Prussia. And he was dealing with the rise of socialists. And instead of saying to the rise of socialists, hey, watch some Dennis Prager videos on YouTube, or listen to Charlie Kirk at Turning Point USA, or like listen to Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, and you won't be a socialist anymore, right? He took their demands seriously. He started, you know, he kind of preempted some of their policies, and he was able to take the sting out of the socialist rise in Germany. And I think he needs to do the same thing in America. We have a rising socialist movement in the United States. If you have somebody like Bernie Sanders running the country, he's not going to be there anymore, but it would be disastrous, right? But the way you preempt that is by saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, let's listen to their concerns. Do they have grounds? I think they have some grounds. You know, we have to be a country that conserves our communities, we conserve our people, we conserve our values, and to the extent that the free market allows that, we're for it. But the moment it turns against it, we're against it. Like, look at a company, you know, like GM. GM took out bailout money, and I bought GM products because I wanted to support local people. They took bailout money, and then they went and they opened up factories in China, and they outsourced production to China and Mexico, right? There's no loyalty there. All we're asking for is, the American government and the American taxpayer does immense amount of services to businesses, okay? All we're asking for is, you know, our sons and daughters die to protect you. They fight so your market lanes can remain open. We educate your workforce so you have an intelligent workforce. We pay taxes so we can build the infrastructure so you can ship your goods. Just be a little bit loyal to us, right? There's no problem with buying goods from overseas, but there is a problem when you're undercutting American workers and American labor. And I don't think that that's a left-wing position. I think it's actually a very right-wing position because it's all about America first, right?
Mm-hmm. Good points. One last point I want to make about the Chinese, and I've been following these coronavirus case numbers. I think the writing's all that you really can't trust the Chinese. I'm looking here right now how Italy this past week surpassed China in terms of the total number of deaths, yet it's virtually half the number of cases. And I get that Italy has an aging population, but do we really think only 3,200 people died in China with all of what happened? I question those numbers. And I think if the Chinese were a little bit more forthright and came out much earlier with the issues at hand, perhaps we and other nations could have better planned for this. But there's no telling how bad of a situation we could have right now if Trump didn't enable or put into place that travel ban with China. Was that sometime in late January, early February, something like that? Because we've now seen how the Chinese and the Italian connection there, and then how it spread throughout Europe. And obviously at that point, Europe and the U.S., there's a ton of travel going back and forth between those, or between the European, I guess we'll call it the continent, the Euro, or whatever you want to call it, and the U.S., each and every day. So once it got to Italy and then in the Europe, it was hard to stop. But I really question the Chinese. And it seems like now they're having this propaganda campaign that trying to push this idea that the U.S. is behind the coronavirus and this and that. And then there's some in the media who seem to be latching onto this. I just think this is a reminder that not only, you know, we went in this tariff war with China, and there's a lot of negativity and a lot of pushback for it. But I hope people see now why we have to do what we have to do with this country. They may seem like their leader may seem like this nice guy who Trump has a great relationship with, but I think at the core they do have great issues with the U.S. Being the true superpower of the world, and they're going to try to do what it takes to take us down.
Yeah, so I don't think the Chinese want to conquer America per se, but I definitely think that you're right where they want to be the dominant power and they see us as an enemy. And I think it shows our own stupidity and greed that these same people we've outsourced most of our industrial sector to. So I take that point entirely. The Chinese lied about this virus. They incompetently handled it to begin with. It grew so big that they went full on quarantine mode. But had they been more open and forthright, like, we wouldn't be where we are today. And what's really gross is instead of saying, hey, we made errors, we need help, right? And there's no sin in that. They have at the same time tried to accuse the United States of being racist against China. And at the same time, they're claiming that the virus is American made. And that America developed the virus and the American military developed it, which is really insulting, right? They're kind of passing the blame. And I got to comment on the left. I'm going to make this a partisan point, but I hate to do it, but I got to, right? I think Trump was slow to act on this. I think his major mistake was he didn't act appropriately right away. I think he wanted to protect the stock market, and he was hoping that by being slow to act, it would kind of wish it away and the hype would go down and the market would continue to be strong. But he found religion. And he's been, I think, doing a pretty effective job afterwards. And I think if you look at the Democrats, what have they done? They basically whined, number one, that Trump was racist for shutting down the Chinese border, right? Like, because that's the ultimate thing. This country can buy us out. They can erode our working class. They can buy our industrial base. But heaven forbid we shut down our borders for a few weeks because that's racist. Then Trump called it the Chinese virus, right? And, oh, God, that's so racist. That's so racist. That's so racist. And it's like it's such a sign of a decadent society when the elite class in that society are more concerned about potentially hurting the feelings of a superpower, a rival superpower, than they are of like the effects of that superpower's dominance. And one other thing that I keep thinking of, and I don't think anybody's made this point, but you know, for two full fucking years, pardon my language, for two full years, Democrats were going on and on and on about Russia, 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 Russia. You know, they're in the United States. They run Trump. Trump's a pawn of Russia. All of that was wrong. It was all conspiracy theory. It was all nonsense. It was baseless. The worst Russia did, was they ran a couple of Facebook ads, right? And they act like there's this massive conspiracy of Russia controlling the United States. And they were completely wrong. Like, read the Mueller report. Their God had clay feet, right? There wasn't anything there. In the meantime, the Chinese have bribed our politicians, have bought up our industry, have made key investments in critical infrastructure. And the Democrats, if you criticize the Chinese, well, you're being xenophobic. You're being racist, you know? No, fuck China, okay? I have nothing against Chinese people. You know, people are people all over. But fuck the Chinese government. Fuck China. And, you know, the economy is going to go into the pooper because they eat bats, you know? It's like, what the fuck? Sorry, you put in my language, but it's unreal. And the Democrats, again, Joe Biden, okay, Dementia Joe, I'm going to get in my Joe Biden point. The guy has completely lost it. And I saw people posting on Facebook that if you think Joe Biden has dementia because you're watching him, he's clearly in mental decline, then you're spreading conspiracy theories and you're not a doctor. You can't say that. Like, are we really going to trust this guy who's been a globalist on every position, who has done nothing while America's working class has been outsourced to every third world country in existence? We're going to trust this guy to lead our country? You know, the Joe Biden shtick that makes me so mad, I'm going on.
No, you're good.
I'm sorry, Michael. Is he's like, oh, I'm a working class guy from Scranton. I'm a working class guy from Scranton. Did I mention I ride the Amtrak? Oh, I'm just a working class guy. The guy's a multimillionaire. Okay. He's been a politician his entire life. He has no value add because he's like a third rate lawyer. I don't even know if he passed the bar. He graduated at the bottom half of his class at the University of Delaware, which isn't exactly Yale Law School. And he's voted, if you look at his votes, he's been an open borders guy from the beginning. Joe Biden is part of the reason why 97% of our ibuprofen is made in China. So the idea that this guy is like a working class guy is a fucking joke. Sorry.
No, no. You made some excellent points, and I'm glad you chimed in about Uncle Joe, who has that might be a great episode for another podcast. The unbelievable turnaround, left for dead, and then out of nowhere, he's now going to be the Democrat nominee, which is music to my ears. But I'll share those thoughts in a future episode because I have plenty to say on that. But I think you made some good points about the Chinese. So I do want to move on, and you touched on it. So let's talk about how President Trump has handled the crisis. Then we're also going to talk about Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, who's been receiving a lot of praise across party lines from not only in our state but nationwide. But I first want to start with Trump, and I agree with you. I think he did handle it poorly to start. He was slow to start, and I could recall – I don't know I think it was right after he instituted the travel ban with China, when there were folks on the left maybe politicizing it and saying he's a racist and blah 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 blah, and then Trump used it at political rallies calling it a hoax. And I do agree with you that I think maybe he thought that by saying certain things and trying to protect the economy, protect the stock market, that we would see our way through. And there may have been some initial truth to that if this outbreak was concentrated into China and didn't spread into Europe, like I made in my previous point. But unfortunately, it spread into Europe, and at that point, it was just too little too late. But I do think he was slow to start with it. And then he eventually appointed Vice President Mike Pence to lead this coronavirus task force, and he made a address to the nation. I think it was like on Wednesday or Thursday night. That was like right in the time of the NBA player finding out that he had the virus, and they shut down the NBA season essentially for the rest of the year, and some NCAA tournament being postponed and all that. That was kind of like the timing of it. And it seemed like once the economy – or once the stock market started to crash, that's when I think he realized, like, okay, I need to grab this thing by the reins and take control of this, because if I don't, it's going to have a huge impact. And I do think, especially within the last week, he's done a much better job of taking control. I think it's a good thing that he has these hour and a half press conferences where he pretty much answers any and every question, although he got into it today with Peter Alexander, which maybe we'll talk about here momentarily. But I did see a stat or a poll that came out, ABC News poll that came out, where I think it was yesterday, it had his approval rating on the crisis at 55% to 43% disapproval. And the same poll a week ago had it at 43% approval, 54% disapproval. So I definitely think that he's certainly improved his standing, and he's really trying to do all the right things, and he's working with governors of both parties across the country. And even Governor Newsom, Governor Cuomo from New York have really, I guess, even praised the administration for how they've been handling it. They've been doing everything they can to help these states. And I think he's done a much better job now. I guess, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think he did a bad job per se. I would say it was more that he was slow to react. I mean, he did shut down the border. He got a lot of flack for shutting down travel from China, but I do think that bought us time.
Remember, the Democrats called that racist when he did that, right? We can't have... We got to have open borders 24/7, 365. But I think he was slow to act. And I think, you know, don't forget, the media at that time was saying, it's just a flu. It's just a flu, bro. It's just a flu. It's just a flu. But I think he's done a good job once he got into the new mindset. Once I think he accepted that the market was dead for a while, and that the best way to help it was to kill coronavirus. And I think he just kind of adopted that mentality. He's been doing better. One thing that's been going around is Trump did not say coronavirus was a hoax. His exact quote, and I pulled it up because this has been bothering me. He said, "Now the Democrats are politicizing the coronavirus. One of my people came out to me and said, 'Mr. President, they tried to beat you on Russia, Russia, Russia. That didn't work out too well. They couldn't do it. They tried the impeachment hoax, and this is their new hoax.'" So he didn't say the virus was a hoax. It was just more the reaction to the virus was a hoax. A little bit of a nuanced position, but it does matter. But yeah, I think he's been doing well. I think let's move to DeWine, right? DeWine has had a really strong response here in Ohio, arguably saving lives, getting everybody quarantined. He was one of the first to act. I think he's gotten some flack, but my wife is a big fan. She's really happy with how he's been handling it. So what do you think about DeWine?
Yeah, I mean, I think DeWine's done, for the most part, I'll share my one grief with him in a minute. I think, for the most part, he's done an outstanding job. And where I think we could differ DeWine from Trump is that DeWine was much more proactive in getting out ahead of this before – just be more proactive as opposed to Trump, who seemed to be a little bit more reactive once the stock market tanked. He started with something with like the public gatherings, preventing schools from being in session for, I forget how long, if there was even a time, I think it was indefinite. Then most recently, a big impact I would say has been what impacts a lot of people. That really impacts all of us is the closing of restaurants and bars and just keeping it open for takeout. But he has these daily press conferences. He has Dr. Amy Acton, who's, I guess in some ways you kind of call her a little bit of a superstar, but she is from Youngstown, Ohio. So yeah,
she's from Liberty.
She is. She has a unique history. At one point, I think she said that she was homeless for a period of time, and it's just a remarkable path. She ended up going to Liberty High School and then now is in charge of the Ohio Department. She's in charge of the Ohio Department of Health, correct? Is that her role? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's
but,
fair.
I mean, she's genuine. She's extremely compassionate. She's I think between her and DeWine, it's been a great show of force. They also have these 2 o'clock press conferences that I've been listening to every single day. And DeWine is not afraid to make these decisions and calling these shots. And, you know, I got to give them credit. These are decisions that are causing a huge impact on the lives of the 11 million people in this state. This state is virtually not as much as it is in New York and California. It's in many ways it's shut down. I mean, outside of grocery stores and pharmacies and some other businesses, for the most part, most people are now working from the confines of their own house, like I am, and I believe like you had said you are as well. So these are huge decisions, but they're bold decisions, and I got to give him credit. And I think from everything I'm reading across the internet, he's getting a ton of praise, and probably, if not, he's got to be near the top in terms of how a governor across this country is handling this crisis right now. I'd love to see how, if they were to do a poll right now, I wouldn't be surprised if his approval ratings were in excess of 70%, because I really just think he's just a true leader. He's not making any of this political, partisan, anything like that. And for those reasons, I just got to give him a lot of credit.
So what was your one critique?
Biggest critique, and this is a pet peeve of mine, is how he's handled the election. And let me take a step back. I guess
here we go.
How he's handled a few of these things, I guess I just wish maybe you give people more than 6 hours notice, like on a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, that you're going to shut down all bars and restaurants that night. And some of his other decisions, they're made and they're effective like as of the close of business that day. I just wish there would be a little bit more notice given. But my biggest pet peeve was how the election was handled. And I quite frankly, I don't know if I'm still over this yet, but let's take a step back here. The Ohio primary election was to be held on this past Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day. And on that Sunday, in the daily press conference with DeWine and Husted, they had commented, they had received questions. Well, you know, you don't want people in social gatherings of less than 50 people. You know, what are your thoughts on the elections? And he, you know, he had pretty much said, you know, this is an important thing. It's, I don't know if he necessarily said a sacred thing that is unique and important to all Ohioans. And they didn't see the need to cancel the election or postpone it. And then the next day, bam, I think it was around 3 o'clock, he says, we are going to file a lawsuit in the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas to stop the election from taking place. He, as governor alone, doesn't have that discretion to change it, so they had to go to court. And here's really what got me, grinds my gears. It goes to court, and the judge rules against DeWine. So at that point, you have people, including the state House leader, Householder. Yes, Larry Householder. He puts out a memo to all of his people saying that, and this was probably around 8 or 9 o'clock that night, oh, we're going to have an election tomorrow. So, and let me take one more step back. I'm just venting here. You know, when he did this at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday, you have boards of election that are preparing, who probably just finalizing their final in-person voting at their boards of election, and they're getting ready to get everything transferred out to their various locations. I know my youngest brother was going to be a poll worker that day. I know somebody else on Facebook who had said he was supposed to go at 6 o'clock and pick up supplies, and he had received a call at that point after DeWine had talked that not come and pick up supplies. So anyways, the court ruled against DeWine. So at that point, you're thinking, okay, well, we're going to have the election tomorrow. Then 2 or 3 hours later, he comes out with these bizarre set of tweets between him and LaRose saying, you know, we're essentially against what the judge did, and we'll have more to say. And this is at like 11 o'clock at night, 7 hours before the polls are supposed to open. And then half hour later, he comes out that he's going to issue, or Dr. Acton's going to issue, a health emergency for the state, preventing the election from taking place. I just think it was incredibly poorly done on his part. Just that between 9 o'clock in the evening to midnight, it was just pure and utter chaos. You had no clue what to believe, and it was just a circus, and I thought it was handled extremely poorly. And I guess one more point to make. So that you postpone this election, you have we do not know with 100% certainty, as far as I know, that this election can necessarily take place on June 2nd or any day. So what's to say, like, a judge can't just say, hey, you shouldn't have been able to do that, and this, you know, nobody else can vote. I think that's the thing that probably gets me most fired up. We don't even know if somebody like me or my wife are even going to be able to vote in this election. Okay, that's my initial thoughts.
Why wouldn't you be able to vote in the election?
Again, how does he – he alone doesn't have authority to change the date of election. So they use this health emergency to postpone the election. But on what grounds does anybody have to change the date of the election? That would be up to the state legislature, who I'm sure from reading some of what I've read that they weren't in favor of what was taking place. It's just, there's just too much uncertainty there as to how these things proceeded, and I don't know. I was very fired up about it.
So I have a couple things to say. I'm very sympathetic to you. I think it was poorly handled. I think it was chaotic. I'm going to cut him some slack given all that's been going on, but I do think that there was a dictatorial element to it. It was basically, this is the way we're doing, and it should have been done. To suspend an election is such a severe act. It should have done with broader consultation with his administration, with the legislature, and with the, you know, the judges. Everybody, what they should have done is the legislature should have passed something, because I think it's their prerogative.
Yep, they're the ones who have the authority to set the date.
Yeah, I don't like some, you know, Dr. Amy Acton, good lady that she is, intelligent, she shouldn't have control over the elections. Ultimately, at the end of the day, she's a bureaucrat, and she's a very good one. This is not an insult, but she's a bureaucrat. She's not responsible to the people. The legislature is. So I think that the bigger question for me is, well, I think they should have went ahead with the election, for number one. I think that the cost of the quarantine would have been minimal. But more important than that, I think that the big thing is, when does this all end? And the way I view it is, for the first week, everybody's kind of in good spirits. They're bored. Week two, people are going to get depressed. But week three, people are going to get antsy and angry. And I think that's going to lead people to getting feisty. And people are going to want to know when this ends. And I think that the one thing that they should have done with all these quarantines is that they should have given it an end date. Now, even if that end date is eventually rolled forward to, say, 3 weeks later, right? They should still say, as of April 12th, we're going to lift the quarantine. So people have something mentally and psychologically to prepare for. Businesses can plan, even if they have to delay that. I take that point. But they should still do this, right? And I think that the indefinite quarantining and the shutdowns and that, the civil libertarian in me is thinking to myself, okay, I get it. I know why they're doing it. I trust that they're doing it for the right reasons. But does this create a really, really bad precedent? Because you declare an emergency and you shut the world down. You shut down civil liberties. You shut down businesses, etc. And again, I get it. I'm conflicted. I am very conflicted. But a lot of things can be emergencies. A lot of things can be a crisis. If coronavirus proves not to be that damaging, then you potentially sunk the economy and destroyed civil liberties for what, mm-hmm. right? For you did all this for preventing a flu, a bad case of the flu. I don't know, but that's how I think.
You bring us some excellent points, and it comes down to that element of trust, and can you trust what is being conveyed to us on a daily basis by the various levels of government, state, local, federal levels? I absolutely trust everything that Mike DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton is telling us. It's not that. It's just, you said it best. If anything, it's just a slippery slope that now we've seen it happen once, and what's from stopping somebody in the future from issuing something like this? If you have some sort of incumbent who might be in trouble for a re-election, and you know, what means can I have to change the or prevent the election from taking place? You know, I know that's a drastic measure. That's on the extreme end, but you never know, because now we've let this happen. And I think even your wife had a Facebook post. It may have been even today. I didn't read the whole thing, but it's essentially coming to this core of our freedoms. And again, there's no doubt in my mind. I believe what the government's telling me with this, but at what cost?
Yes, I do. And too. Yeah,
it's something that at the moment I don't think I've dwelled on it enough. I think once this subsides in the future, it's something I need to reflect back on, and whether all of these actions were worth it. But again, I with the impact on our healthcare system and what we're seeing in Italy, I think a lot of these actions are warranted. But again, I think you bring up a great point with how long. And, you know, initially you hear people talk 2-3 weeks, but in 2 or 3 weeks, our numbers are going to be sky high with this virus across the country. And is that the time to remove these restrictions where now you're going to open up the public from this idea of social distancing in some way? And then what's from just allowing this thing to blow up once again, you know, just when it's maybe close to reaching its peak, then it could just take off right again. So I don't know what the answer is. It's a tough situation, and I know I'm happy I'm not one of those ones calling these shots, because the impacts are going to be lasting for months and months, and maybe even years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, there was one more point I wanted to make, and I can't remember. I guess we'll see. I think the America that we knew is gone. It's a new America. That doesn't necessarily need to be a bad America, mm-hmm. right? But it's change. And hopefully it means one that's more self-sufficient, more independent, that's stronger, that's more resilient. That would be the good type of change, and not one that's more fearful and more supine, I guess you could say. Yeah. But we'll
yes,
see.
Yes, it'll be. That's going to be the big thing to watch here moving forward. So one thing I did, we didn't talk necessarily about was Trump bucks.
Oh, yeah, fuck. I love – I'm sorry.
No.
It's, yeah, I love Trump bucks.
It's all good. So the latest proposal is that I've seen from Mitch McConnell is yes.
It's stupid. It's so stupid.
Essentially $1,200 per adult, $500 per child. Income thresholds, I think it's 75,000. I initially thought it was 75,000 married filing joined, but I think it's 75,000 if you're filing single, or 150,000 if you're filing married filing joint. So for somebody like me, it would probably be like $2,900 with my one son from for 2018, something like that. But you know, what's fascinating about this and how maybe this differs from maybe past stimulus ideas is the fact of the matter is I hate the idea of printing money and all that, but you got to look at the cost versus if you don't do this, how bad could it possibly get? So you got that aspect. So, you know, that would be step number one. Step number two, and I'm just losing my – just when I'm in the middle of this day, and I lose my thought. But step number two – I'm losing my thought. You want to take it away first?
Oh, I'll take it away. I love Trump bucks. Okay, so when the first news came out, they're called Trump bucks because they're just free money. It's like it's Yang Gang free UBI cash, right? When it first came out, they're like every kid gets $500 and every adult gets $1,000. Okay, no ifs, ands, or buts. If you're a U.S. citizen, you get $1,000, and I think that would be awesome because having two kids and a wife, that's $3,000 in my pocket doing nothing, right? Finally, a welfare program that Dane Davis can use. I'm so into it. I am super into it. I started planning what I would do with my Trump bucks, like assuming the world doesn't end and I don't lose my job. I'm going to pay on my mortgage, get the mortgage down, save some interest. Maybe I'll buy some stocks. Maybe I'll buy like a gun or something to protect my family in the apocalypse. Maybe I'll just buy like candy, like $3,000 worth of Easter candy. You know, who knows, right? Maybe the world will be so bad by then with my 3,000 Trump bucks, I could buy an egg, like a single egg, because they're all out. I don't know, but I was excited. And then the Republicans screwed your favorite co-host, Dane Davis, over because they came up with all these proposals and they were like, well, you know, if you make above a certain income, you shouldn't get any Trump bucks. And I was like, fuck you. You know, the people that vote for Trump aren't getting the Trump bucks. And all the people that didn't vote for Trump are getting the free Trump bucks. And I think there should be no income threshold, right? If you're a rich guy and you get Trump bucks, you know, just give it to a charity or invest it in the market or, you know, give it to your favorite servant or something. I don't know. But don't put any limits. And then they're like, well, if you make over this, it fades out. And then if you're at this level, it's a formula. And if you lose the algorithm, you're – no. That is against the spirit of Trump bucks. Trump bucks is just – doesn't matter. You get $1,000. You got a kid, you get it $500. You know, there's 18 of you, you get $18,000. I want Trump bucks. I want Trump bucks now. No income limit. Just give it to me. Give it to me now. I want my free money from the government. Okay. Just keep printing it. It doesn't matter. Deficits don't matter. Nobody cares. Interest rates are at like 0%. They're going to go negative. The government can borrow like $5 trillion in 1 year and nobody's going to squeeze or bat an eye because interest rates are so low. So let's do it and let's give Dane Davis some Trump bucks. Thank you. I think Maxine Waters is proposing the proposal where it gives it to everybody, and I am team Maxine Waters. You'll never hear me say that again, but she's giving out Trump bucks, and I want some Trump bucks.
I'm also looking forward to using the Trump bucks on some home improvements around my house. Yes.
Yeah. It's, what are you going
to
do with the Trump
bucks? I
might
have to recarpet the upstairs, but I have some painting. I don't know what I'm going to do, actually. Something around the house that it's – yeah, I don't know yet. Something around my house. I like spending money on the house. People weren't lying when they said,
"Yeah, I do too."
Buy a house, it's an endless pit of money. And but I enjoy doing it. I like putting money in my house. It might not.
And especially if it's Trump bucks, right? Because it's just free money. It's not like you paid that in taxes. It's just imaginary money, and you can buy stuff with it.
They might have to get like a fat head of Trump, or put like some lettering that says "Make America Great Again" on one of the walls in honor of it, in whatever room reaps the benefit of it. So I finally got back to my point before I lost it there. And so the point I was trying to make is this shutdown is strictly a government imposed shutdown. I mean, we could argue about whether a recession was going to happen sooner rather than later, blah, 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 blah. But I know the most recent jobs report for February was outstanding. It was like 273,000 jobs. Unemployment rate still super low. The economy before all this took place was on track to hit 30,000. Sure, maybe something was going to happen within the 12 to 18 months. But then again, if you look back the previous 12 to 18 months, there's a lot of talk about a recession that didn't happen as well. So it's a government-imposed economic shutdown. So the government has to somehow pay or support the people that they're – I don't want to say screwing over, but they're indirectly screwing over because people can't work and then they're going on unemployment. So I'm typically not in favor of these types of things and printing shitloads of money, but – this is one of those instances where I think you have no choice. And if you don't do this, the economic impact is going to be enormous on our economy, because people right now, plenty of them are going to be out of work. B, they're not going to be spending their savings like on major things. They're going to just be purchasing the bare minimums just to get by. Once things subside, there's no guarantee that these people are going to have jobs right away. It's going to take time, and it's going to have a massive, massive impact on the economy. So Trump and the Republicans they pretty much have no choice. They have to do something like this to make the economy, or at least sustain it through the election. And we shouldn't be viewing it from that perspective, but a lot of this does boil down to politics. And on the flip side, the Democrats love it because they're doing their favorite thing, which is just spending money and printing money. And Andrew Yang sitting back saying, yes, this is what I envision happening. But it's a one-time thing, and I think it's something that needs to happen. And I'll be really curious to see how these proposals evolve over the next few days, because I definitely think it'll be something that probably they'll try to pass here in the next 2 to 3 days is, I think, would be their goal if they truly want to get money out by April 7th or whenever that is.
I just hope they don't do an income cap for the Trump bucks, because if I don't get any Trump bucks because of my 2018 income, for whatever reasons, is above the level, I'm going to be so freaking angry, right? I need Trump bucks. It's like everybody's having a giant party and you didn't get invited to it. And it's like your friends, the people you don't like, they're all having a big end of the year party. It's a blowout, and they're giving away free money, and you didn't get any Trump bucks. So I hope I get Trump bucks. I don't know. It depends on what they do with the thresholds and stuff like that. But I want Trump bucks. And like you said, this isn't welfare. This is Trump bucks. It's different. Okay, welfare is called welfare, and it's welfare. Trump bucks are Trump bucks, like B-U-X, and they're literally free money from Trump. So it's not welfare. It's not even the same thing. It's not even the same concept. Okay, welfare is like money from the government, and Trump bucks it's free money from the government. Okay, it's different. It's imaginary. It's great, but you can still use it to buy things. It's the coolest thing ever. I can't wait. In all seriousness, the interest rates are zero. Okay, what's the worst that could happen? Oh, no, the bond market panics. American government spent too much money. Okay, interest rates are rising. Oh, okay, well, that's a good thing. We just raise interest rates from the Federal Reserve, and we'll be good. Oh, okay, the problem's solved. You know what I mean? We tax people. You tax everybody after they get their Trump bucks, if we need to. I don't think we need to, but I'm just saying, those are the solutions. We got to keep the economy going, and we need Trump bucks. I think he should give 2,000 to everybody and 1,000 for every child, because then that would be even more money in my pocket. And I'm in favor of more money in my pocket, because I love Trump bucks. Even Tommy, your little brother. Oh, I'm Tommy. I'm so smart. I'm the oldest Metzinger boy. Yeah, well, guess what? He's not going to be so smug once he's got his Trump bucks. Everybody's going to vote for Trump because it's free money.
He actually sent me, and I'm trying to find it right now. Oh, yeah, here it is. The proposal, this may have been what you're talking about, the proposal out of the House Financial Services Committee. And I'm just going to paraphrase here, but it's at least, and wait till you hear some of these things, it's at least $2,000 for adults per month and at least $1,000 for each child. And essentially, it's at least $2,000 an adult, $1,000 a child for every month of the crisis itself.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Dude, this would be awesome. I'll use the Trump bucks. I'm gonna paint my house like you. I got a tree that needs to come down, and we'll buy some energy stocks. I recommend everybody buy energy stocks. We'll buy, we'll pay down my mortgage. It's gonna be
great. Yeah, I mean, this thing is as the tweet says, it's wild. And this is straight from Chairwoman Maxine Waters, who's all over it.
Yes, my gal. We're taking the name.
I never thought I'd hear that in my life. So yeah. I guess one last point I want to make before we wrap up this episode is maybe taking a step back and looking at how perhaps somebody in China eating a bat has essentially taken down some of the largest world economies right now and just kind of shuttered them, and how crazy it is to think that our nation right now, and in many ways, is shut down, and how we're going to be stuck inside for probably another 3+ weeks and have that uncertainty. And just it's just kind of remarkable to think that we're living in this day and age where something like this has happened, where a virus from China has completely crippled our nation and shut it down to the point of the California, I think the National Guard of California is going to be out and enforcing their shelter-in-place rule, and they're going to charge people with misdemeanors in that state if they're not abiding by the rule. It's crazy times right now.
It absolutely is crazy times. There's one line that Trump said, "We will no longer surrender this country or its people to the false song of globalism. Globalism got us here, and it's going to take nationalism to get us out. It's time for the world is changing. It's time for people and their political outlooks to change. Let's just give everybody Trump bucks, and then let's start building things in America. Okay, it's no longer about conservative or liberal. It's about Trump bucks and America first, or being worried the Chinese are being called, being worried that the president's calling it the Chinese virus." Those are the two sides, right? Like, one side's like, hey, everybody gets free money and we're going to build factories in America. And the other side is like, oh my God, this Twitter tweet is inappropriate and potentially offensive. And I'm really scared. Please hold me. That's it. That's it. I don't know what you call those political camps, but that's the new reality.
I like it. It's the Trump bucks camp. I think we could build a beautiful wall on our southern border with these Trump bucks as well.
So that's something we could
envision happening. I did want to make another point, though, is, I do hope these business owners right now who are listening, because we got such a massive audience, but I'm hoping Trump gets through to these people and be like, listen, we're going to offer you these SBA loans. We're going to help you pull through this. But if you think you're going to go back to your old ways of manufacturing your stuff in China so you could make a few extra bucks here, those days are over. And I really hope he takes charge of this. And this should be something that the Democrats should be 100% on board with. I don't see why they wouldn't. And really crack down on this. And another thing, I think what they're going to loan some of these airlines, $50 billion or whatever, they better freaking use this for the right reasons to stay afloat. And they better freaking pay us back, and we better charge them a nice interest rate when it's all said and done as well. Because I want to say, and I don't own any airline stocks or anything, but I thought one of them or maybe two of them had done a significant amount of stock buybacks in recent years. And some of this stuff they better stop doing, because we the U.S. taxpayers are going to keep these industries afloat. And we better not let what happened with GM, where they proceed to build stuff across our borders. There should be something written in these damn loans that these companies are getting to prevent that from happening. So some things like this in the future don't take place.
Agreed 100%. We are completely on the same page. You don't want the government running your business.
Exactly.
Don't take a loan. You don't want to take a loan. Well, then build up some cash reserves, right? So that you'll be prepared in downtimes, because the economy goes up, the economy goes down. You know this. I know this. The corporate leaders do. But their greed got ahead of them. I say, you know, it's time to have a little if we have to have a little bit of socialism in small doses to prevent the, you know, the greater poison, right, like chemotherapy, then let's do it. If we have to nationalize some airlines, if we got to bail them out, but we get like 20% of their stock.
We get that. And we get Trump's portrait on the tail painted on there, and all the planes say, "Make America Great Again." And we paint them red.
Yep.
That'll get my brother Tom going.
Yeah.
Tom and I are big aviation geeks.
Oh, yeah.
He's a much bigger one, though, than me.
Yeah, he is super into flying and stuff like that. So yeah, that's the deal. That's the deal. This is the new reality. The world of Trump bucks. Okay, the right wing is rising. We no longer care about stupid stuff like balanced budgets and free trade. Those are dead. You're never going to see another balanced budget in your lifetime. Okay, free trade is a myth, and it's used by companies to boost their profits by exploiting quasi slave labor. Okay, that doesn't mean that conservatism is dead. It just means it's taking on a new form, and it's actually more strong. And that's what I'm going to give you a big hint, okay, to everybody listening on this podcast. Do you know what the left wing in America is really, really afraid of? They are afraid of a party that moves to the center or to a more populist direction on economics, but stays very conservative on social policy and stuff. So one that's in favor of building factories in America and building the wall, because that is where the majority of Americans are. You know, all these yuppies are like, "Oh, I'm a fiscal conservative, but social liberal." Yeah, well, that's the yuppies, and that's like 10% of the population. The vast majority of Americans are nationalists. They're small C conservative, and they're protectionists. And if you have a political party that starts to evolve a little bit, it's going to win them. It's going to win big, and that's how the Republicans.
Let's just hope the Republicans see that and don't revert back to their old ways. You know, there's going to be plenty of Republicans who are going to go out there and champion the idea of a balanced budget and fiscal responsibility, but so many of them are the biggest hypocrites in the world. And I'm not afraid, and I think we're both not afraid as conservatives, to call out people from our side, because they're so often they're full of it. They're full of it every single time.
Yeah.
And listen, I support Trump and what he's done, but not that he necessarily pushed the idea of a balanced budget. But he made it seem like, you know, with Obama doubling the national debt and this and that, and obviously Trump's not going to come close to doing that. I think when he started, it was around 19 or 20 trillion or something like that. He's not going to go to that level, but even he has spent just like some of the other presidents out there. So this whole idea, this mirage, just this idea that Republicans are fiscal conservatives, you could say that, but you better start acting like it if you really want to use that.
Yeah, totally agree. And look, again, I'm not anti-business. I'm all for these things, okay? All I'm saying is the rule of the game is you want to enjoy America and America's liberty and America's markets, then you have to support America. That's it. Is it so hard to ask that masks are manufactured here in the United States and ventilators? You know, I'm not going full on commie. I'm not a commie. I'm very anti-communist. But I recognize that we have to have a little bit of protecting and putting the people first if we want to prevent something far worse.
And we're not saying that the U.S. government needs to run these factories. We want private enterprise 100%.
No, not at all.
We just want to prevent. We just want to have those little caveats in there to prevent these companies who might be based here in the U.S. from going overseas and doing this stuff when it has a direct impact on our economy.
Yeah. You can play Monopoly. Right, you pick the properties you want to own, Boardwalk, or you want to own Marvin Gardens, but you got to play by our rules. That's the deal.
I like it. Well, anything else you want to add? It's been a crazy time, and all I got to say is, I'm hopeful, but I think it's going to get a lot worse, especially in New York City. I'm looking at this New York Times map. I'll have to send this to you. It's just remarkable. The population density of that city is crazy, and I think they're over now. Let me see here. Over 8,000 cases, I think, in New York alone, and most of them are in New York City and around there in the different boroughs. So prayers to New York. I know the governor of California has said that he thinks maybe a third of their population, which is 38 million people, is the whole population of California. So do a third of that, so about 13 million or so could end up having the end up within, I think, 8 weeks having the coronavirus. Now, a lot of people may not even show many symptoms at all, or there's going to be another batch who are going to show symptoms who are going to be treated at home, just like you would with any other illness. But I mean, these are mind-blowing numbers. And so it's scary times in the economy. It's fragile. The stock market's still fragile. I'm just hoping we could kind of maintain a level between 18 and 20,000 on the markets would be kind of something I could live with and I'm hopeful of. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, listen, Michael, all I want to say is stay healthy, stay well. All the Mets and your kids, there's like 85 of you. I hope you all do well. I hope you all stay alive. Tommy needs to stop being a grumpy little dude. Your other brother needs to stop trolling my cooking streams. And we'll all get along and we'll all get through it because America cannot be defeated by a virus.
Wise words to conclude this episode. We want to thank everybody for listening. And like us on social media. Please, everybody, share us on Twitter and Facebook. Listen, people right now they need entertainment. And we provide a great hour of entertainment right now. So I'm really going to encourage all the people listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please share it. That's one great way to promote our podcast because let me tell you, I tried again to do another Facebook advertisement and it's just a nightmare dealing with Facebook anymore with anything political. So I'm going to try again with this one. We'll try again and hopefully things fare better for us. And so, yeah, people listen, subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts. All the reviews are 5 stars. I think we have 10 or 11 reviews on Apple Podcasts, and they're not all for me because I actually have an Android and an iPad. So, you know, we have positive reviews, get a lot of good feedback. So, there's a lot to talk about right now. So we just want to grow this thing and before this election coming up. So thank you all for listening. And anything else, Dane?
No, I don't want to read these.
There's
reviews.
One review, but there's 11 like stars. Like people have rated our episode. So I mean, we got that going for us. There's not a single 4-star. We're all 5 stars. That's so
wow.
You know that's,
okay,
that's
well,
why
that's
I'm
great.
Asking people. You know, we provide a lot of great entertainment, and a lot of you folks right now are not going to have much else to do. You're going to be sitting at home, social distancing from everybody else, and sooner or later, you're going to be sick of reading. Or watching the nightly news, or going on social media, Facebook, whatever. Well, listen to that's all we're asking. Listen, it's an hour of great entertainment. We think you'll love it, and and then you'll definitely subscribe and tell all your friends about it. So,
and if anybody is morally opposed to taking Trump bucks, please send them to me. I will help dispose of the Trump.
All right, everybody,
bucks.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Take care.